freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Buehler has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, Seattle. Football is back. Preseason game number one in the books. Mariners, huge win down in Houston. Baseball is so weird. Ken hit Scrubs and just took apart one of the best starters in baseball. And oh, by the way, Felix has been moved to the bullpen. We will get to all of that in 30 minutes. But Danny O'Neill sitting in for Salk. Good morning,
bud. Hi, Brock. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Salk decides to go to Las Vegas, so you get dealt the stinker of a hand
This is reunion tour, baby. This is awesome. This is wheelhouse.
We're bringing back the bounce back relationship.
This is Danny O'Neill writing about what he saw last night. And what did you see, Danny?
Russell Wilson is awesome. And for all the talk about the things the Seahawks don't have this year, they don't have the pass rush they've had in past years. They don't have the pedigreed defense. They don't have...
Seven Pro Bowlers. They don't have all the stars.
They don't have the swagger and status as sort of the reigning heavyweight of the league. They do have the best quarterback in the division.
Yeah.
And it's not close. While San Francisco's hoping that Jimmy Garoppolo really is as good as he looked, the Rams are pleading with Jared Goff that he's going to continue his maturation and that last season wasn't a high watermark after what was a pretty forgettable rookie season. And that the Cardinals are trying to figure out what they have in Josh Rosen. The Seahawks have a franchise quarterback. And in the one possession that he played, he provided a reminder that he's not a question mark. He's not an uncertainty. It's not a matter of seeing what you've got. He is a huge asset to this franchise.
No, Danny, I think the only question mark is really, or the only question is, can he really get better? You know, we talked about this, Salky and I did yesterday, and Doug Baldwin in The Athletic gave him some credit, kind of, and said this is the best he's been in about time, and he's taking the next step, and if only he may maybe learn these lessons earlier. I mean, that's the only question to me, is legitimately, if he is going to get better and take a step. I think you posed that question a few years ago, and he hit his ceiling. Is there still more for Russell Wilson to do? Well, if last night was any indicator, and this play yet again to finish off the touchdown drive, that was a very positive first impression.
From the five, Russell makes a man miss, looks to the end zone, fires a shot. It is caught for a touchdown! Seahawks! The play was made by Russell, extending the play, and Nick Manette finally finds a little open area in the right corner of the end zone, and Russell drills it in there for six. The Seahawks score on their opening drive of the game.
There are two things about that play that are really important in my mind. The first is that Brandon Marshall was on the field for it. Yep. He didn't catch a pass. But the fact that he was out there playing, I don't want to say that he's a lock to make this team. I can't imagine this 53-man roster without Brandon Marshall. And they tried to isolate him up high, and they were going to try to throw to him. And he was covered up, and Russell didn't like what he saw. And then he rolled out, and he threw a dart on a dead run.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I mean, he put mustard on it, finds Vanette, who did a good job of finding a little crack in the coverage there. It showed Russell at his best. The first play of the drive, though, Brock?
Yeah, a little sneak, little play-action sneak route.
Well,
Tyler Lockett sneaking underneath. He had him wide open. Just throw it to Tyler.
Why is he running?
Because he can still run.
Why is he running?
Because he doesn't mind running.
Why did he scramble? I really was looking at it like, we need to get back to the in case of emergency break glass. That's
sure.
When you scramble.
Yep.
Not as it looks like I can gain 6 yards. Why are you running?
I think, honestly, Danny, because much like that first drive, he's like, what is this? Space around me to do something, and I don't have everybody hitting me and flying around. And, man, this thing feels good, and it felt good to the head coach too.
I was really happy with the fact the offense went down the field. I thought they looked strong and right and on point. Russell moving well, got a couple runs, nice throws and catches and all that.
You know what's funny is the number of times over the last 6+ years, I don't know if you guys have lamented this on the afternoon show too, but certainly we have in the morning, why can't it just look like everybody else? Why does it have to be so hard all the time? I get it. Okay, you want to do it differently than everybody. You want to be a run-first team. You want to be a coverage team and a pass-happy NFL. But why? Why does it always look so hard? And then that opening drive was, that's kind of what it's supposed to look like.
I know. Was that so difficult?
Right.
It was last year. We never actually saw that. It was 4 of 5 passing by Russell Wilson. He had 2 scrambles for 14 yards, I think, total. You had a nice run by Chris Carson. Actually, Rashad Penny had a pretty good run during that drive as well, where he read it and bounced it to the outside and moved. Like, it was a functional NFL offense.
You threw in rhythm. You had space around you in a pocket. There weren't free runners on 4th and 1. You actually blocked everybody.
And that was after a 3rd and 16 where you got 15 yards. Nick Vinette with a pretty tough catch down the middle.
So this is what life can be like when it actually is, I don't know, conventional and professional. And it's not just Russell having to do 10 guys' jobs. He just got to do his job.
They helped Russell.
You know, and I said to, I think I asked Russell during the broadcast yesterday. By the way, he was hyped and jacked. Stacey Rosti's, you know, if you think she gets hyped and jacked, Russell is hyped and jacked during our little interview on the sidelines with him as ever. But I said to Russ, like, was it kind of nice to hand the ball off and actually see a run play go in a positive direction? It certainly was. Coach Carroll, he made a point to talk about, in this running back crew, Chris Carson doing his part.
Chris looked really good, and I thought Rashad had a chance, and Mike had a chance to do some stuff. You know, when you're looking at 3 and then 4 running backs, you know, it's hard to get them enough touches, but I thought they all showed like we've been seeing, and I think it's very promising. I was really happy to see Chris get out and do some stuff, and Rashad get out of trouble a couple times and made some things happen.
You good for a full-blown takeaways at 8?
Yes, absolutely. I've got my list together.
Oh, you got it already?
Yes.
Good. So we'll do a lot of that at 8 o'clock, and we'll bounce back and forth between all of the different things we took in. I guess the 2 things. So number 1 for you was just Russell stood out. I guess the 2 things, just big picture for me overall, Danny, was, okay, that is what it's supposed to look like. This is why we made staff changes and a new coordinator and an O-line coach, where guys knew what they were doing. There was not now in the backups to backups come in, and there were free runners, and it was a fire drill, and it kind of got messy in the second half. But the first group, and even in the second group, was, okay, we all know what we're doing here. There's a very clear plan offensively what we got. And then defensively, just the overall speed. I mean, the speed, they have made an emphasis from Barkevious Mingo to Shaquem to even Tedrick, could say that they have made an emphasis that we are going to be fast. And from the booth last night, there were guys open, and then all of a sudden, bam, they just closed down. There was a underneath route, and it looked like it could go for 10 yards, and bam. You know, there was a lot of overall team speed that, to me, was really encouraging.
I found myself looking at the defense and really wondering if that's enough in the regular season. Like, I was encouraged by what we saw from the first unit offense. And really, I wouldn't even say it was so much, oh, we see the result of all of the offseason overhaul, as much as, you know what, man, they've got a really good quarterback.
They do.
And that's going to matter a lot. And we'll see how all the rest of it plays out. And, yeah, the running backs looked better, but it would be very difficult for them to be worse than what they got. I came away worried about the defense and just wondering if they've got enough playmakers on that side of the ball. We know Bobby Wagner's a playmaker. We know that KJ Wright is a difference maker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really about it right now. Everybody else you're hoping shows some progress, whether it's Shaquille Griffin. He had a nice play on the ball on the sidelines.
The guys inside, Jaron Reed, and I think some of the new elements that you brought in there, I think are going to be really stout. I think those guys are going to be stout, but
it is. Can they rush the passer?
It is.
Can they rush the passer?
I went back to watch some of the game, right, just because when you're in the booth. And
oh, that's why
flying.
I got an email from you at 1 a.m.
Well, you got to go back and actually see some of it. And the first time out, the first third down snap, right, the first third down snap with the number one defense, your 2 pass rushing ends were Rasheem Green and Jacob Martin. I mean, your 3rd-round pick and, what, your 5th, 6th-round pick. Those are your first. Now, that's because there's no Deion and there's no Frank, so obviously those are your 2 guys. But that's Pete saying, all right, man, you know, this isn't Brandon Jackson. Marcus Smith was inactive for the game. This is a couple young pups. Let's see what they can do flying around. And then Barkevious Mingo got some of his run. You're right. That's not familiar names that you've seen rushing the passer for year after year after year.
Rasheem Green is the guy people talked about coming out of the game. And he had a really nice outside pass rush move, and he ended up getting a sack off of it. He beat his guy 1-on-1. And I went and looked, and it was number 73, and I'm like, oh, that's their third string yes. Left tackle.
Right.
Does that move beat the starter? And I hope so. But I came away from it, and the preseason, the toughest thing to judge from the preseason is which of those sacks are actually indicative of, hey, yeah, that's going to work when the popcorn pops in the regular season.
But you got your quarterback.
Got your quarterback.
You got your quarterback. That really at 7-10 is all you need to know.
need to know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
There's a whole lot to need to know on this Friday. A lot going on last night between football and baseball, but we'll start with the hometown team. It was nice. It was a late arriving crowd. There was some traffic on a Thursday night, but you started to feel the voice of those 12s. We certainly did in the broadcast booth as they just came alive and got a chance to, I think, be in the discovery phase that we're all in. You know, we're going to discover a lot about these running backs, about this new coordinator, about this new O-line coach, about a lot of defenders that are going to get in the action in a rookie class that for the first night out, it's a pretty good showing from top to bottom with a bunch of rookies making their mark. It's just fun to see some football back in the building. Yes, the Seahawks did lose 19-17. Yes, you did see a fumbled snap and a fumbled snap and a shotgun snap over the head for a touchdown for the first time, I think, in NFL history. Lots of things to learn and discover over the course of preseason. But overall, I think a pretty positive first step.
What was that? There was a series of three straight snaps.
That was your guy.
Two that went low and then one that went over the head. Over the head of the quarterback?
That's your former Seahawk offensive guard turned center trying to make it work and didn't work too well.
No, that was brutal. The best player for the Seahawks, Russell Wilson. The second best player for the Seahawks, rookie punter Michael Dixon. I was adamant that I wasn't going to give in to this. Oh my gosh, look at the Aussie punter. Oh my gosh, look at the Aussie punter.
Why are you blushing in there, Lance?
Oh my gosh, look at the Aussie punter.
Yes.
Like booting it two different times, guys struggled to catch it.
Blush, okay? This is a professional blush.
The two different times that guys struggled to catch it because of the way it flutters. And like, I was so skeptical of that. It just comes different off his foot. It just comes different off of his foot. Not only that, but he's able to pin it against the sidelines. Oh my gosh.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Second thing you need to know is baseball is a beautiful yet cruel sport. You can't hit slappies.
You can't
beat the Blue Jays or the Rangers who've sold their season out, but the arguably the best roster in baseball and the defending World Series champs, you're going to go into their place and you're just going to mash all over Justin Verlander. Scott Service made a decision to flip that lineup around. Move Mr. Haniger to the top of it. Just enough of the stagnancy over the last month of an offense that was struggling. So here comes Mr. Haniger right at the top of the order, and here came a home run, triple, double, single, back-to-back innings with three runs on Justin Verlander and just enough to finish it out. 8-6 in a good series opening win for the Mariners.
Denard Span tripled, second hitter that was there. As I watched him approach second, I very firmly heard Danny Glover's voice from Lethal Weapon. When I watch him run to third base, I just imagine him, I'm getting too old for this stuff. He's motoring through. Haniger was awesome, man. And the home run he cracked off of Verlander, I don't know what I liked more. Was the fact that Haniger was sitting on a pitch and got it and just destroyed it, or Verlander's reaction, which was just kind of like, as the ball was thrown to him, he just went, oh, well, he did a lot with that pitch. That didn't go so well. Haniger was a stud last night. Four hits. Homer, two doubles. The Mariners, their bats woke up. If they had shut out the Astros, that wouldn't have been as impressive because there's no Correa who's supposed to be back today. Springer's on the DL. Altuve's on the DL. You knocked their ace around a little bit.
Yep.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Speaking of an ace, your opening day starting pitcher for the Mariners this year was Felix Hernandez. Way back when this whole thing started against the Cleveland Indians, he was your opening day starter, and as the calendar has turned into August and less than 50 games to go in this season, he is no longer your opening day starter. He's not your second, third, fourth, or fifth. A decision finally yesterday, not only to mix the batting order up, but Scott Service telling Felix pregame, you're going to the bullpen. And for the first time in Felix's illustrious career as a Seattle Mariner, and it has been illustrious, he is going to find himself not in a rotation, after 14 years, going to find himself coming out of the bullpen. That decision made both privately with Felix pregame and shared publicly with all of us after that win.
I hope it works. I feel they're moving the problem, and what ails Felix is not going to be fixed by moving to the bullpen, and that I don't think this is going to solve anything. I don't blame the Mariners for doing it because you've got to try to find a way to extract some sort of value from the more than $30 million that you're still obligated to pay him. I am not hopeful that this is going to be effective in terms of performance, though. And I don't even think that's a matter of Felix's attitude. I just see a guy that I think is cooked.
That's everything you need to know every day at 7:10. And we follow that up with the guy down on the sidelines. Last night, the professor, Mr. Clayton.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
JC, you had the fanny pack on last night?
I didn't have the fanny pack on. I did not.
No fanny pack. But you were working. You were down on the sidelines doing your thing with Seahawks Radio on that visitor sideline last night, which is such a cool perspective, I think, for you and for all of us to get to enjoy. What were your biggest takeaways from last night?
Well, on the big picture, I thought Andrew Luck looked pretty good. He had a good rhythm, and you can see. It was funny because when I was watching him in the pregame warm-up, I was trying to see, okay, it almost looked like he was in a pitch count because he really did not throw too much. A lot of the times he was out there kind of had his hands on his hips and all that. And then, talking to him at the right at the fourth quarter, you can see that he was nervous. He had no idea what he was going to be able to do. But what he was able to do was go out there, get a couple field goal drives, and then move the football. And then I think he felt real good about it. And you can just see how animated he was, going up and down, talking to his players, patting them on the back, and all that stuff. That was good. On the Seahawks side, what you look at is that this may be a pretty good rookie class.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the rookies really did some very, very good things.
John, Shaquem Griffin with 9 tackles. How good a game did he play?
I'm pretty good. I think that there were some times where maybe he was a little bit out of position, but that's being a rookie, which I think you see all the way around. But I think that you can see he follows instructions. He's really mobile. He's a great athlete. He can tackle. And so I think that was I thought a lot of the rookies did so many good things, and he certainly was one of the ones who led the way.
We have sure talked an awful lot about the addition of Schottenheimer and Solari, and granted, it's one drive, an opening drive for the Seahawks with the number one unit, but it was right down the field. It was methodical. It was a mix of some run and some pass. Could your eyes see something different, both scheme and execution, with the number 1-0?
Oh, 100%. I think the biggest thing that you saw is that, more downfield running because of the blocking. I think you can see the run blocking was much, much better. And the big thing scheme-wise, there was 18 completions. 13 of them either went to running backs or tight ends, where, you go back last year, they rarely threw. What I counted up yesterday was like 28% of the completions went to running backs. Mm-hmm. And again, you're talking about a tight end unit. I didn't necessarily think Nick Vinette had a great game. Will Disley did some good things. But I think that what you can see scheme-wise, I mean, they now have some things there that they can really move the football, move the chains, and do all those things. So I thought that was really positive.
Biggest beneficiary last night might have been Jermaine Ifedi, not because of how he played, but because of the injuries behind him. What do we know about the injuries to Isaiah Battle and Jamarco Jones?
Yeah, that's got to be concerning because now it's looking so he's going to win the job at right tackle, Ifedi, because of default. I would have to think that in the case of Jamarco Jones, the way they were doing it wouldn't surprise me. It's a high ankle sprain, so that could be 4 to 6 weeks. Again, it's just an ankle sprain, but I know that Pete Carroll said that he's going to miss some time. And then I think in the case of Battle, I don't know what kind of a knee injury is, but it wasn't as bad as they thought. So they have to hope that Battle is not going to be too bad, because if you're going to not have Battle out there, there's not going to be a battle for the right tackle position.
How about the 12s last night? Could you feel their presence down on the sidelines? It was a little bit late arriving with some traffic, but man, at least from my perspective in the booth, you felt some of the energy of this fan base that I think is anxious to discover what this new group's about.
Well, particularly there was a spot, I think, in the fourth quarter where they really rose up because, I mean, you could see the problems that some of the young quarterbacks were having. I mean, remember, I mean, this is a team that had seven fumbles, and they're having problems. I mean, Brad Kaya just really could not even hold the ball, and under the third string quarterback was out there, and I mean, when things were getting tight in some close yardage situations, I mean, he couldn't hear. I mean, I know that I think there was one play, because I know that one of the offensive coaches was yelling and yelling and yelling. He actually called the wrong play because, again, it was so loud out there, because I think he couldn't hear, because I know he was pointing to his helmet and trying to give an indication. It's like, whoa, what's going on here?
You know, Danny's point in his article, and you can read that at 710sports.com, was a bit about a reminder of Russell Wilson. You know, there's a whole lot of other change, but you still have your franchise quarterback. And I ask you, John, do you think Russell can even get better Is there still room in his game as a franchise quarterback to take yet another step?
100%. Yeah, because I think with this offense, he can really do that. Because now I think you can see he's slowing things down a little bit. Although, you know, what happened in the first play, he comes out and he runs the ball and he slides. And, you know, but I think what you can see is that there's more, I think, strategic tools that fit him better. And that what I mean by strategic tools is, I mean, getting the ball in the passing game to the running backs, you know, trying to run around and trying to move and do those things. No, I think he's definitely getting better. And I think there's no question. I mean, what he's showing as far as the leadership and all that, he's really coming into his own. That's why I think that most people are now totally agreeing he's one of the five or six best quarterbacks in football.
Professor, the Browns last night. Now, I was very skeptical of the selection of Baker Mayfield. I don't think he's going to work out long term, but the way he played last night, I started to wonder if I'm going to have to eat my words. He looked pretty good.
He was pretty good, but again, I think you see there's going to be, I mean, because again, coming in the way he did is doing more things, I think, against second team Giants, and I don't think that team is very deep at all. But because I know when I saw him in practice last Friday, he came down and, you know, like he did, he drove, made a nice drive, got him down, got the touchdown, but then what they put the first team in, and he really struggled to do things. But I like what I see of him, but he's not ready yet. Tyrod Taylor is going to be the starting quarterback of the team, and I think this could be a situation much like they did in with the Rams with Jared Goff and so many others. It's like you put him in more in November and than you do in, say, September.
Yeah, the Browns are for real, John. The Browns are
for real.
It was the tight end Njoku.
Njoku, yeah. For real.
He looked pretty good, too.
This team is for real, John. You just wait.
Of course, I mean, remember, what's his history? He drops the ball a lot.
Yes.
Njoku does.
Hey, it was a late night game. I don't know if we've got a fan fiction Friday or not. We'll see.
Time now for the wild card. What?
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
It's time for fan fiction Friday.
Oh, boy.
John Clayton is an analyst who works for the CIA who's lived his entire life without human contact due to a severely compromised immune system. When Clayton helps the CIA track down a dangerous chemist played by Jared Leto, Clayton discovers that Leto has the ability to develop a serum that can cure him. Watch as Clayton and his friendly male delivery boy, played by Boy Howdy, attempt to spring the criminal Jared Leto from a maximum security detention center and coerce Leto into creating the serum. Will Clayton get his illegal custom drug, or will he be caught and exposed to the dangerous diseases of the world?
I think I'm going to take my chances on the diseases because, I mean, this is kind of like an Earl Thomas situation because I can't, I mean, if I go break in and try to take him out of the prison and all that stuff, I don't know for a fact he's going to give me the stuff or give me the ability to do that. So I have to try to, you know, see if there's any other cure than this because, you know, it's too much of a risk. It's like if you don't know, you don't know. And until I break into the prison, I don't know. So unless I can arrange something where I can go make a visit with him, I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah, you got to be careful. It's kind of like that Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin exchange. You just don't know how it's going to go last night.
Yeah, that was kind of vicious, wasn't it?
I've watched that at least 20 times. It's fascinating to me because it looks like Cam comes out because Benjamin a week ago said, hey, no matter, I it was the worst place for me to go. Put me with a quarterback who's at all accurate, Roethlisberger. He said Eli Manning. He would have rather played with Eli Manning than Newton. Mm. And Newton came over to him, looked like tried to shake his hand and then put his hands behind his back and started talking to him. That was tense.
You think Cam said to him, get my name out your mouth? What do you think?
Possibly. Oh, I know. Did I miss something? Didn't they win 15 games in the regular season that year? Didn't they go to the Super Bowl, and didn't Cam Newton win MVP?
I believe all of that is true, John. I also believe that was a masterful wild card by you today. Way to go, buddy.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, and you can hear John Clayton every single day at 10 to 12, locked and loaded. All sorts of player interviews yesterday down on the sidelines doing what he does best and joins us every single morning as he does you. Danny's in for Salk today. Danny, Dave, and Moore at 4 o'clock every single day. You get some of the professor. Let's switch gears just a little bit. A full list of takeaways at 8, Blue 42 in 20 minutes. But there was also some pretty large news here in town. For the first time in nearly 15 years, a superstar got demoted. What does it mean to him? What's it mean to this team? And what in the world happened to those Mariners bats last night? We'll dig into all that conversation. Danny in for Salk. It's Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Oh, Lydia can spin it, Danny. Not only does she dominate the Blitz every morning,
atmosphere.
6 to 7.
A good DJ keeps their audience in mind, so I usually try to pick songs that Danny will like.
crushing the ratings, Lydia, last month.
Next
huge,
level.
Huge ratings in that 6
MC Slug and
awesome.
Ant.
Is that who that was?
Atmosphere. Oh,
appreciate that. Thank you, Danny.
For the
Danny
land
O'Neil.
Of snow and purple rain.
That's Danny O'Neil, not in just for a segment or two. No, and he's in for the entire Friday, baby. After that Seahawks win, we'll get the whole list of takeaways. But, man, there was fireworks going on, not just in Seattle, CenturyLink Field last night, not just the home show the night before tonight for Pearl Jam. Yeah, some things shaking down there in Houston, finally after a month. And I thought Jerry was pretty clear with you guys. And I agreed with what you said after your interview with Jerry DePoto this week, saying, you know what, when the going gets tough, a lot of times GMs or folks can duck. And he didn't duck. And he stepped in the batter's box and said, it's been a bad month of baseball.
And it was calling on his team, really, of yes. saying, hey, you guys got to focus on the little things. And I see that mostly as the part that's probably most disappointing this week has been the defense.
Oh, yeah.
Like the defense and the lapses that they've had. And it's not just Seager's three errors and the miscue he had, but that this team hasn't done the little things.
Nope.
They haven't played clean baseball. And it's hard enough to win and to pitch well and hit well enough to win. But when you shoot yourself in the foot like they have, you kind of take yourself out of any shot.
Then you go 2-5 against a Toronto team that's down and a Texas team that's down. You're 2-5 to begin this little stretch. And now you got to go to Houston, and now you've got to face one of the game's best in Justin Verlander. And finally, Scott Service says, okay, enough is enough. I'm not just going to roll out that same lineup. No, I'm going to put Mr. Haniger in that leadoff spot, and he's going to come out, and he's going to make me look good with this shot.
The windup and the 1-1 pitch. Swing and a well-hit ball deep to left field. Going and going, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Below the railroad track. Up there in left center field, above the garage doors where the Mariner bullpen is located, Mitch Haniger on the third pitch from Justin Verlander. Skies one out of here to left center field, his 19th home run of the season. And just like that, the Mariners lead the Astros 1-0. I think Mitch likes hitting in the leadoff spot.
I think we all liked seeing that last night. Even the skipper, who, by the way, said before the game, he pulled his best Jim Moore, like, I don't know if this is going to work.
Is it going to work? I don't know. It did.
It
four
sure
hits.
Yeah, the home run, the triple, and then Mr. Segura got in the action too.
Fly ball into right field, and backing up is Kemp. Still backing up. This one is going to be on the track and bounces over the wall in right field for a ground rule double. That will score Span from third, and the Mariners have a 2-0 lead off of Justin Verlander here in the top half of the first inning. Segura with a double and a run batted in. And now the Mariners only need a single right here to hit for the cycle as a team.
With the first guys out, Span had that triple. Segura had the double. So can Cruz come through last night?
The 0-2 to Nelly. Swing and a line drive base hit into left center field. Segura running third, being waved in by Scott Brosius. Up of the ball is Mariznick. The throw into second base. An RBI single for Nelson Cruz. Scores Gene Segura. The Mariners have a 3-0 lead. And as a team, the Mariners have hit for the cycle with the first four batters off of Justin Verlander here in the first. Haniger a home run. Span a triple. Segura with an RBI double. Nelly Cruz with an RBI single.
And I hear just a little bit of Riz going, could not hit Gallardo, could not hit 45-year-old Colon, could not hit Rothschild or whatever that guy's name was.
Housechild.
But we're going to get after Justin Verlander, one of the game's best. An agent of change yesterday. Changed up lineup, a whole lot of activity, 6 runs in the first 2 innings, getting Verlander out of that game, and a nice series opening win. And all that's wonderful. But that's not the story. The story last night is what happened before that game, and Scott Service telling everybody afterwards his explanation to one King Felix about his next move.
I had an opportunity to sit down with Felix later today, after we had met earlier, and explained to him that, you know, I thought was best for him in the ball club at this point, for him to slide to the bullpen. There's been a lot going on with Felix. I think a lot of, you know, pressure, whatever you call it, everybody's expectations, where it's at. He's done an unbelievable job as a Mariner, and certainly don't take any of this lightly, but I just think trying to make the best decisions for the ball club, and really the best decision for Felix at this point, but just take a breath. Step back, gather yourself. I still think there's a chance, he'll let us know, how he performs out there, but, you know, could get back into the rotation. But for right now, where our ball club's at, just to kind of let him take a deep breath and then go from there. So he will be in the bullpen as of now.
I think it's the right choice that he doesn't start again. You can't, when you're in a position where you're now going to have to track down teams and you're going to have to do it into the teeth of a schedule where you're going to play three more against the Astros, including that start Sunday Felix would have made. Mm-hmm. You're going to play three at Oakland. You'll get Robinson Cano back the second game of that series, and you're going to come back home and you're going to face the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. Like, you have a tougher schedule than the A's do. You're going to try to track down the A's while playing a tougher schedule than they do. You can't concede one out of every fifth start or one out of every 5 days go into it hoping it's not going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
I'm not that optimistic that a move to the bullpen is going to do anything other than delay the inevitable, which is Felix not pitching for this franchise.
Would he be open to going to the bullpen?
No idea.
And
send you his number if you'd like to call.
We couldn't figure out what that was.
No.
Like, we couldn't figure out.
No idea.
We really debated that.
What, the awkward pause right after?
No, when Jerry said, I could send you his number if you want to ask him, was it Jerry, like a moment of, okay, now you've kind of pushed too far.
Like is he mad at Jim or is he mad at Felix?
Correct.
Right.
Like, or is it just fed up with the situation and you kind of got on his last nerve with an already frayed patience?
No idea.
Here's the other part. I don't care how Felix feels about this.
Yes.
I really don't.
And if
he gets his dauber down by this or this deflates him, well, then they absolutely are just delaying the inevitable. But I don't care how Felix reacts to this.
I'll take this apart in a couple ways. I said earlier this week he shouldn't pitch for the Mariners again this season. I just thought he was done. There's just no gas in the tank. And, you know, this is, I think, a reflection of Felix not wanting to go to the DL. This is Felix still having an immense amount of pride and wanting to get it right. The only thing he had to say to the news yesterday was, I got nothing to say to the reporters and some of the others. Is I'm sure he's processing a lot of it. But, Danny, I think this is a tremendous move. I love this move. And I love it because of this, of what Scott just said. Guys, for the next 46 games, this is about team, period. D. Gordon, you're going to hit ninth. All right, you're beat up, your toe hurts, your ankle hurts. You've said that, Danny. You don't think he's right. So we're not just going to run you in the leadoff spot because you are D. Gordon and been a gold glover and a hits leader and everything else. You're going to hit ninth for us. Handiger, you're going to hit first. Felix, I'm sorry, you're the king. 14 years you've been here. You've been the most dominant pitcher this franchise has ever known for that stretch, but you're going to the bullpen. So I think this is one of those moves that has, I think, some tangible benefits both in a rotation and just very practical from a pitching perspective. But it's also a statement to that team, if they needed one more little injection of it, that we will do whatever it is going to take for this team to get over the hump. I like what it says both in the practical and I think also from the psychological to that clubhouse. And by the way, how are you going to handle this, Felix? How are you going to handle this over the next 46 games?
Shouldn't they already know how he's going to handle it, though? Like, shouldn't his reaction to what Scott said to him and how he's been, they know way more about him, his attitude, his interaction with teammates, the capital that he has in mm-hmm. that clubhouse than anybody. Shouldn't they already know that? And if they think he's not going to be productive, why are you even doing this? I think this is a huge stretch to even think he's going to be effective. He's a starter going to the bullpen, which he's never done before. When have his worst innings been? The first,
mm-hmm.
and it's always going to be the first inning when he's coming into the game, right? Like, you're going to have, he takes time to get going now. You don't have time to get going in the bullpen. You've got to come in now and be ready to do it. I think from a practical standpoint, and this isn't about, because I agree with you with the message and all of those things, mm-hmm. that I think this is going to be a relief to the rest of the team because they're going to see that they are taking tangible steps to help us win and give us a chance to win. I just don't see him being an effective reliever.
Well, he's certainly not going to be in a leverage spot anytime soon. You know, that's not going to happen. He's not going to come in the seventh or eighth or ninth. He's going to come probably in some mop-up duty. But he's also, Danny, got to be mentally in every day. You know, and that's going to be something new. Not every fifth day, not a couple days to do what you want, maybe in between starts. But you got to be engaged every day. And, oh, by the way, you're going to be with those guys in the bullpen, you know, right next to them every single day, too. It'll be fascinating to watch some
Does
of this.
Does this mean King's Court is every day?
Yes, every single day. Turkey legs and T-shirts out in King's Court because you just never know.
You never know what it's going to be. He enters the game and we'll have a royal march that proclaims the procession of the king.
Takeaways 20 minutes away. Everything Danny and I saw last night, and there was a lot to see in that Seahawk game. But up next, Blue 42. We do it every single day. Danny will throw some football questions my way, and I got maybe one or two for him as well. Danny's in for Salk's Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U-corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right. You going to call out the cadence? We're all set to go, Brock. You ready? How would you grade the rookie class's performance in game one?
I'm going to say A-. I'm a tough grader. I'm a stickler. I can't quite go
You're
A.
not a tough grader if give him an A-.
Sure I do. Sure I am. Because it'd be very easy to say, and look at the, just as a group, as a rookie class, Shaquem, the leading tackler, 9 tackles. Michael Dixon was phenomenal.
Dixon Will Disley, was really good.
Will Disley was excellent, both as a blocker and 2 receptions. And we go through this list. Rasheem Green was the most productive player with a sack and a half and doing some damage. And even, yeah, Rashad Penny got in the act early when he was with the number ones. I mean, in totality, that is a pretty strong outing.
Rashad Penny averaged 2 yards a carry.
I could have said an A, but I'm going to say an A-, because you never give a rookie an A. You never make them feel that good about
their
themselves.
Their first-round pick averaged 2 yards a carry.
Bro, when he was with the ones, he was just fine. When he's with the twos and threes, a little more difficult. Even with the ones, had a big block, and I'll play this highlight again. That opening drive, touchdown, it was part Nick Vinette. It was a whole lot of Russell throwing a bullet. But Mr. Penny, that running back, he even got involved picking up a block.
From the 5, Russell makes a man miss, looks to the end zone, fires a shot. It is caught for a touchdown! Seahawks! The play was made by Russell, extending the play, and Nick Vinette finally finds a little open area in the right corner of the end zone, and Russell drills it in there for 6. The Seahawks score on their opening drive of the game.
I guess what you saw out of that class, Danny, is none of them were overwhelmed by the crowd, the audience. You also, and I don't know if you caught it at the end of the game. I don't think you did. You're probably in the media scrum. TV interviewed your guy, Rasheem Green. And that is a young dude, man. He's just turned 21?
Just turned 21.
And Kurt Menefee turned to me. We didn't do the interview. It was Dave and Aaron had interviewed him. And Aaron asked him, I think, a very good question. I think you had some questions with him after he got drafted too, right?
I called him the wrong name.
Well, and he just took things very literally. And Aaron asked him a question about something, and he was like, what'd you say? Now what do you want from that? Like, what are you trying to ask me? And Kurt's like, that just shows you there's some beauty in like a 20 or 21-year-old. I'm just like, yeah, I'll just say it as it is. And I thought all of those guys were like, hey, man, I've played football. I've done this before. Michael Dixon's punted the football. Will Disley's blocked people and caught the football. Rasheem Green's got double-digit sacks at USC. Rashad Penny with a beautiful little shuffle cut on that opening drive. Like, I've done this before. And none of them overwhelmed. I thought that was a really positive sign, game number one.
You didn't mention Alex Magoo.
He was fine, too.
Question 2. Is Captain Andrew Luck back?
Yes. Kind of. As John Clayton said down in pregame, and I was watching Andrew as well, they're going to be very guarded and very careful. The number of throws, 15-plus, intermediate range, deep ball, hardly saw any of it. Did you see him throw to running backs and tight ends a lot? Yes. In 2018, is he going to throw to running backs and tight ends a lot? You better believe it. And did Frank Reich help the Philadelphia Eagles and Nick Foles win a Super Bowl by throwing to tight ends and running backs? Yes. Yes, you did. And I think that'll be one of the trends you see in the NFL as much as anything. A cookie-cutter league, a league that takes from others, watched what Philadelphia did, continuing to utilize their personnel and saying, you know what, maybe these running backs and tight ends, we can load up on them, and they can create matchup advantages. It was great to see Andrew Luck back, to see the joy of playing the game. He talked about that afterwards. He's like, you know what? I just let myself go. I didn't try to tell myself, I got to do this, I got to channel that, I got to be this way. He said, the heck with it. On walking the streets of Seattle yesterday, he said, no, I'm going to let it go. I'm just going to take the whole thing in wherever it's going to run. And to have joy playing football again was a positive sign for Andrew, certainly the Colts, and I think the NFL at large as well.
Watching the difference in velocity when Brissett came into the game, Brissett throws the ball a lot harder.
Oh, yes, he does.
And that difference with Luck. Luck's injury still doesn't make sense to me. Suffers a shoulder injury, plays through it, undergoes surgery in the offseason, which then knocks him out an entire year.
Some of the details of that story may eventually come out.
That doesn't add up to me. But Captain Andrew Luck, who is the best Twitter follow, wrote, "Dearest mother, I write you a renewed man. I stood upon the battlefield once more, and the feeling was glorious. I used my sidearm multiple times with great success. The engagement may count for nothing, but the victory has emboldened the men. I am filled with hope." Andrew.
I mentioned that account last night during the game.
Captain Andrew Luck is the best Twitter account.
I screwed it up, though. It's kind of typical me, right? Trying to be cool pop culture guy and like, oh, I can kind of do this. No, you can't. Just stay in
your
lane.
What did you say it was?
Because I called it General Andrew Luck instead of Captain. What an idiot.
Which position group for the Seahawks had the best performance, Brock?
Why do you ask it that way?
I don't know. Just felt like it was what was called for in the moment.
You know whose game I liked last night? And they didn't get the ball thrown to him a lot. It went to tight ends and running backs. But I like the game the receivers played. Just watching them block, watching them run hard, watching Brandon Marshall in the game with the ones that... I like that. Tyler Lockett had a nice little catch. David Moore went up on a high point, made a tremendous play. I just kind of like that the effort of that group. Even though they didn't get a ton of opportunities, that group played hard. They played fast. Stringfellow, I thought, got a ticky-tack call.
Should not have been called on that.
He came back.
Pass also should not have been thrown,
no,
to be fair.
No, probably should not have been at that moment. Mr. Magoo throwing
spins
it up.
Spins around 360 degrees and hucks it.
Danny, I kind of... got a sneaky fascination with Stringfellow.
I do too.
All I have seen for 2.5 weeks is him making a bunch of plays. He did so again last night. I like the play of that group as much as any other group. That's Coors Light's Blue 42.
You did not mention CJ ProSize nor Amara Darboh.
No, I did not.
Oh, because neither one of them played.
Yeah.
Probably not the best situation for either one of those guys right now.
Now, Darboh didn't practice Tuesday, Wednesday, so you knew he wasn't going to go. But our boy CJ, come on.
Hip flexor flared up. Into practice on Wednesday. He doesn't go. We'll see. We're going to get to takeaways. That's going to include them. That's coming up next here on Brock and Salk with me filling in for Salk.